Today, markets twitch as relationships rupture, or is it just the yen bond problem? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, not his post covering finance and property news. A quick look at the market show that the US dollar is languishing near three-week lows against the euro and Swiss franc, actually with a 0.53% slide in the US dollar index. That measures the currency against six major peers, marking its worst single-day performance in 6 weeks. The greenback dropped by more than 1% against Europe's shared currency at one point on Tuesday, the lowest since December. And the DXY is currently at 98.63. Oh, and the S&P 500 and the Nasdaq Composite also dropped to the lowest points in a month on Tuesday's trade in the US as investors returned from their long weekend. Treasury yields, which rise when bond yields fall, vaulted to multi-month peaks, with both the two-year and the 10-year tracking higher. So it begs the question, what is driving the move? Well, Scott Bessent, speaking at Davos, suggested that this was more to do with events in Japan, as the prime minister there called a snap election and bond yields shot higher than the Greenland question. And Trump's latest tariff threats. Markets are going down because Japan's bond market just suffered a six standard deviation move in 10-year bonds over the past 2 days. This has nothing to do with Greenland, he said. Actually, the PM in Japan recently announced a snap election for February the 8th and promised to cut the food sales tax to zero. There was no plan announced to cover the lost revenue. Oh, and by the way, Japan holds $1.2 trillion in US treasuries, more than any other nation on earth. So when Japanese yields spike, capital gets repatriated. And to repatriate, of course, they sell American assets, stocks, bonds, well, pretty much anything. So it's true that investors are spooked. But what about Greenland? Well, as illustrated by the news that a Danish pension fund is planning to exit US treasuries by the end of the month, they had cheated it to concerns that the policies of Trump had created credit risks too big to ignore. And of course, Greenland is strategically important to the US, as first, it's the best place to set up anti-missile defenses to intercept ICBMs coming from, say, Russia or China, but also because it's a very good place to set up offensive missile capabilities to threaten Russia and China. Actually, the Wall Street Journal had a good graphic out a few days ago showing the trajectory of missiles from ICBM sites around Russia to the US would fly overhead or near Greenland, which happens to be almost directly beneath where those missiles would reach their highest points, the apogee, which is where they are most vulnerable to interception because they're traveling at their slowest speeds. And of course, on Monday, as US President Donald Trump renewed trade threats against Europe's allies over Greenland, that prompted a repeat of the so-called Sell America trade that emerged following US tariffs announced last April. So as the rich and famous and powerful have their Davros moment, oh no, not Davros, Davos. Though thinking about it, the two might be closer than you might think. It is important to watch the tides as they move markets and, of course, power. Now, I made a show the other day talking about the new imperialism as global order, or more precisely, the global order as defined by a US-led approach supported by the likes of the UN and other hangers-on, is being upended. Of course, the truth is the few big players have always called the shots, though through the fog of international rules and cooperation. But now it's all out in plain sight. And actually, in a speech at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney said the old order is not coming back, saying middle powers must act together because if we're not at the table, were on the menu, adding that he believed powerful nations were using economic coercion to get what they want. While Carney did not mention Donald Trump by name, some of his remarks seemed aimed at the US president, who is threatening to tariff European allies and the UK unless Greenland is surrendered to the US, and he affirmed Canada's support for Greenland, Denmark, and the NATO alliance. In his speech, Carney said the world is in the midst of a rupture, not a transition. Great powers have begun using economic integration as weapons, tariffs as leverage, financial infrastructure as coercion, supply chains as vulnerabilities to be exploited. And he also said Canada was among the first to hear the wake-up call that geography and historic alliances no longer guaranteed security or prosperity. Great powers are often defined as countries with permanent seats on United Nations Security Council, like China, France, Russia, the UK, and the United States, which shows their economic and military dominance in the world. Middle powers, such as Canada, Australia, Argentina, South Korea, and Brazil, are nations that still exert large influence on global policy, even though their economies are smaller. Now, Carney said that to adapt to shifting geopolitics, Canada is now focused on engaging with other countries and building different coalitions for different issues based on common values and interests. Now, it's worth remembering that when Trump returned to office, he frequently referred to Canada as the 51st state and threatened to join Canada and the US through economic force. The US then hit its northern neighbor and major trading partner with steep tariffs. And recently, Trump added Canada to his push to take control of the partly sovereign territory of Greenland, which has grown stronger and more overt in recent days by posting on social media a map of the US, Canada, and Greenland with an image of the American flag laid over it. As a member of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, Canada stands firmly with Greenland and Denmark and supports their unique right to determine Greenland's future, Carney said in his speech. Our commitment to Article 5 is unwavering, referring to a clause in the NATO agreement that states an attack against one member state is considered an attack on all of them. Now, back to Japan. The dollar was steady against the yen, which is interesting, with the Japanese currency suffering its own sell-off after the Prime Minister called snap elections for February the 8th and pledged a wave of measures to loosen fiscal policy. The longest tenors of Japanese government bonds were hardest hit, with a 40-year yield spiking 27.5 basis points to a record high 4.215% on Tuesday, although on Wednesday it eased slightly to around 4.1%. Japanese bonds used to have such low yields that they acted as a kind of anchor for the global debt market, adding downward pressure on government borrowing costs the world over, but no longer. The yen traded at a record low of 200.19 per Swiss franc on Tuesday and remained close to that level on Wednesday, changing hands at just over 200. And the Japanese currency languished at 185.33 euro, very close to the record low. The Bank of Japan is due to decide monetary policy on Friday after hiking interest rates at its previous meeting in January. No changes expected. Instead, the focus will be on communication from them over the scope and pace of further tightening. But if they do announce emergency bond purchases, that could temporarily introduce some stabilization. If they stay silent, well, yields will keep climbing. But the rout left some hedge funds rushing to unwind losing trades, pushed life insurers to dump bonds, and caused at least one corporate bond investor to pull out of a multi-million dollar deal. Even as traders struggled to pinpoint an immediate catalyst for the sell-off, the overriding worry was clear. The Prime Minister plans to cut taxes and boost spending, and those plans are raising doubts about the financial health of one of the world's most indebted governments. The sell-off added to pressure on Japanese life insurers who hold huge portfolios of government bonds, and concerns about stability in the future will make it difficult for those insurers to go back to Japanese government bonds even after rates become more attractive, said an investment manager at a major Japanese life insurer. Government bonds are generally considered one of the safest assets to invest in because it's deemed relatively unlikely that the issuer, the government, will go bankrupt. That's because a government sets its own rules and can typically raise money when it needs to. Long-term bonds tend to offer investors relatively high yields for relatively low risk because the investor is agreeing to and locking in an interest rate for a significant period of time, like 20 or 40 years. Japan's 7.5 trillion bond market in particular has for decades been considered one of the most stable, but recently demand has been weak for a few reasons which have caused the price of bonds to fall and yields to inversely rise. Adding to the pressure on yields, traders are also increasingly betting that some central banks will slow or halt their monetary easing this year, further dampening demand for bonds beyond Japan. And while Japan's debt-to-GDP ratio has hit a 16-year low, it's still the highest public debt burden among advanced economies. That means demand for the bond is extremely sensitive to government measures that increase borrowing, and some investors see a risk that higher yields could spark a downward spiral of selling. Now, of course, the truth is both the Greenland thing and the Japan thing, they both introduce yet more uncertainty into the markets. And both events, in my mind, risk significant further market disruption. But we should note, Scott Bessent then called Tokyo after his speech, not the EU, but Tokyo. So this is definitely one to watch. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.